Hey, before we get started with this episode, I just want to let you know that this conversation was recorded in March 2022. Also want to give a shout out to Matt Rappold from Midtown Radio and Block Sheep Audio for mixing this one. Enjoy the show.
My name is John Corbin, and I'm here to hear your stories. Today on the podcast, our storyteller is a speaker, a writer, and first-time spoken word poet performer guesting on my EP, Carry Me. It's Alyssa Esperaz. We talk about Black and Asian solidarity, writing poetry to process world events, the myth of the model minority, and a whole lot more. Let's get into it. It's the John Corbin Podcast. It's the John Corbin Podcast. I am John Corbin, here with my special guest. Who are you and what do you do?
Hi, I am Alyssa Esperaz, and I am a follower of Jesus. I am a daughter, a sister, a friend. I'm a communicator, an advocate. I'm Asian Canadian. I am second generation Canadian, specifically of Chinese and Filipino descent. I love Star Wars and ice cream and the Raptors and the serious things that I do, or I guess like the official things that I do. I work as a content and public relations manager for an organization called Compassion Canada.
It's amazing. Welcome, Alyssa.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm really pleased that you're here. Alyssa, who do you hold close?
Yeah, I live with my family, so my parents and my brother. He's younger, but taller than me. And I, like many people, they've been real close for the past couple years. But I am really thankful that we not only love each other, but like each other too. And they're some of my favorite people. And I'm also really thankful to have, you know, good friends and good community. And I'm really rich in that sense. And I'm thankful for that.
Oh, that's good. Rich is a good word. Alyssa, what inspires you?
Yeah, I would say, you know, I was thinking about this in this world, like what inspires me? There's so much. I think the way that I could encompass it is like people who show up authentically in a world that would ask everything else from them. You know what I mean? Like people who show up as their full, wholehearted self in a world that sometimes punishes that maybe, or sometimes would be like, oh, like be anything but, you know, who you fully were created to be. People who show up in a harsh world inspire me.
Yeah, that's big. I've been having this conversation in my classroom. I'm teaching grade 10 and grade 12 this semester. And I've been talking about how the social world, like the punishing, that's what stands out to me, because the social world of high school, it does not reward people standing out, right? It requires this conformity. Yet when people leave, I know their social pressures are somewhat similar, but that's all people want to do is stand out. This is my argument, that they are trying to stand out in their job so they can get noticed by their boss or get promotions, or they're trying to stand out to be like a suitable romantic partner, or they're exercising their skills or abilities. It seems like we learn that pretty early, that your full self can be punished in the world. Alyssa, this is the toughest one. Describe yourself in one word.
That is the toughest one. I want to be able to say rooted. So I'm going to say the word rooted.
Rooted.
In
okay.
both an aspirational and kind of a, I hope that's true, kind of way.
What does that mean to you?
I think, yeah, to me, it just means like there's just a depth, I hope. And like when I, you know, when I say something, I mean it. And when I believe in something, I'm, you know, consistent in that. And just like a steadiness. And again, I think this is coming out of like the world that we're currently living in, mm-hmm. and just like all the uncertainty and tumult. There's something very attractive to me about like rootedness. And yeah, just that depth that a lot of us have been grasping for potentially over sure. the past couple of years.
When I think about the what it would mean to be rooted in something in my life, it connects to me living in Milton, where my wife and I, when we got married, we had certain dreams and desires for ourselves, but those things had to be springing forward from a community where we had roots. It's like we wanted to do, like, say, short-term service work or mission work, or, you know, pursue education in various places, but we had to be rooted in our community. To me, that signals intentionality, or at least it did for us. So I think of someone that, if they considered wanting to be grounded somewhere, that they would have to be intentional in doing so. Does that resonate with you? Is that something that's intentional?
Yes, intentionality is a great word as well. It's like, yeah, that I think too, like, you know, I'm in my 20s, and I think a lot of people think of that time as like, try new things, like, yeah. go move all the places. And I haven't done that. And in a way, it has been intentional. It's been like that intentional choice of like, yeah, there is like a real something rare and important about rootedness. And, you know, that's not to say that it's like not trying new things and not like moving around. Like you said, like that was part of your life, but it came out of that rootedness and groundedness in a community, in people, in like, yeah, just something you can call home.
When did you see that starting within you?
That's a good question. It's funny because at the same time, I'm also like, I work in international development, and like, you know, I'm a very globally minded person. Mm-hmm. Pre-pandemic, I traveled a lot. So it's almost like I needed it as a counterbalance in my life.
Right.
And also, a big part of my kind of journey when I was in university, like a kind of pivotal moment for me, was that I actually declined a kind of dream internship placement in East Africa and opted instead to take one here in Toronto, in Canada, where I live. And so that, I think, was a moment where I really like reflected on some of those things and was like, what do I want out of these experiences in my life? And for me, you know, at the end of that year, I could look back and I really saw like, oh, this is why I felt that tug to stay, because I could point at the relationships that were deepened and the communities that, I wasn't like coming back to and starting over with, but I had like invested that year in.
That's a bold choice.
It was. I'm not going to lie. I cried probably more that week that I made that choice than any other time I can remember.
But you see the fruit from it now.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, it's like you never know that in the moment. And I would never like give that advice to someone based on my own experience. Like, you've got to make that choice yourself.
And those become moments of narrative for yourself, first of all, and then to share with other people. I think about that a lot. The strong conviction I had leaving high school of taking 2 years off. I knew I wanted to go to school, but I needed 2 years. And I remember my economics teacher, don't do it, John. You'll never go back. You'll never go back. And I, it was... Those 2 years were fraught, but I'd rather have had those outside of post-secondary school. When I went to school, it was the perfect time, the perfect journey for me. Those are narratives that I need to retell for myself, and that I definitely share with young people or my students or that kind of thing. Yeah, it's definitely something they have to make, the choice they make for themselves, but it winds up being a good story. All right, so rooted. That's a good word. Would you like to know how I describe you to other people?
I would love to. Now I'm like so curious.
I don't know if I have one word. I get to cheat. I get to use more than one word. So I really admire your work. I really admire you and I admire your work. And I see you as someone that is very bold. We often connect, we don't often connect boldness with authenticity or vulnerability, right? Bold, we say bold and brash, right? Just some kind of front that denotes what we think strength is, and that person is bold and really can't be touched. What is incredibly impressive about you is that you are authentic, you are vulnerable, but you are bold. You speak what you speak out of your experience. You speak what you know to be right. You do it with grace and humility, but you don't hold back. And when there's something, when you have something to say, and maybe when there's something to be said, we will find you there. And that really impresses me. And so that's definitely how I describe you to other people.
Thank you. I received that. thank you.
All right. So my poor memory gets put to the task here, but we start with you. Do you remember where we first met or connected?
I also don't remember. I was thinking about this question today and I was like, I don't know. I think it's just like, and it's one of those just like fun things. I think we all have those kind of people in our lives where it's just like, yeah, I know them. I have no idea how. I know people who know them and I, you know, love and admire and respect those people. So therefore, this human must be a good one as well. So yeah, I'm sure there must be like, yeah, we met here or this is why, but I don't remember, but I'm thankful that, our paths have crossed and the collaboration has happened. And most of it, honestly, like through digital means, which is just like the power of the world that we live in. So that's really cool too.
Yeah, that really is. No, I'm in the same boat. And I think there's probably some mutuals that we have that, like you said, like we really respect those people. And I know Jordan Haywood might be one of those people through the Meeting House Church. There's a number of people that have sidled up to me because of him, which is really cool. Have you ever spoken at a Power to Change conference?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So I think the annual conference that was in Toronto. Mm-hmm. I think I performed there in 2017 with the Lost and Found group, and then probably every year up to the pandemic. So that I guess 18 and 19. So probably 3 years in some capacity. I think I spoke in 19. I think I spoke in 19, but I feel like we probably were, I mean, it's a large conference, so you're probably on one of those bills, I think.
Totally. For sure, 2019, because I remember that it was like one of the last big conferences I was at pre-shutdown. So for sure, 2019, and I'm sure one or two of the previous ones too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so I'm not sure what would have been, the draw for me, except that maybe that Jordan knew you, but I remember the media posts about you and your work, and so I sort of just started to follow what you were doing, and then so I kind of knew you as a speaker, and then would see your poetry or your writing that would come forward, and I found that since then, your work is very timely, very, very timely. Hopefully we'll get into some of that today.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you're my guest. I ask each of my guests to bring a story about collaboration, inspiration, creativity, or learning. And so the floor is yours, Alyssa. What story do you have for us today?
Yeah. Well, I know you're going to talk about the EP later on, so I am not going to steal that thunder and tell that
okay.
story.
Okay.
But I was thinking today about a poem that I wrote in the aftermath of the Atlanta spa shootings in 2021. And as we're recording this, we're around the 1 year anniversary of that. So it's timely. And yeah, obviously that week was just such an intense week for the Asian diaspora, Asian Canadians, Asian Americans, specifically Asian women. And you know, I remember on the first day, like I tried to record like a video to talk about like how I was feeling like five times. And I was like, never mind, I'm going to write it down instead. Mm-hmm. So I wrote it. I wrote this like long post of just like, you know, how I was feeling, my reactions. And I think for so many things in my life, like that's just what I've done is like in the moment, I'm like, people are going to know that this is very kind of in progress, but I want that. Like, I want people to see that in progress of like, here's how we're processing, like what we're seeing in the world and the injustice and all of that. So anyways, wrote that post. But then a few days later, this poem bubbled up for me and it was called They Don't Always Kill You. Mm-hmm. And it was basically just talking about like, you know, obviously this, you know, mass shooting had happened, but, you know, what the feelings that are coming up aren't just of like in reaction to this like really blatant violence, but then it's also the more subtle ways that racism and violence and anti-Asian sentiments and misogyny like shows up in the world. And that's all under the surface of this week. And then you were one of the people that really honored that and saw that. And you had messaged me and said, like, you know, you have to, like, record this. And, like, you know, 1 year later, I don't think anything's come out of it. But that's neither here nor there. It's more the fact that, you know, you really saw me in that week and saw the, just the, you know, what I was trying to express in the experience of myself and my community. And yeah, and so, you know, even though it's not kind of like a actual creative collaboration, I really see that like people like you collaborate with me when I put those things into the world. Hmm. Because I put those things into the world not as just like, okay, now it's done. But it really is like when people respond to it and message me and comment or whatever it is, like that's then the co-creation of this piece of work. That's, and I think every creative can relate to that. But yeah, and so, you know, as I reflect on that, there's so many things that come out of it. I think there's just like what I really just respect about you is the way that you really honor and fight for creativity and creatives in our world and for art. We need more people like that in the world. And so, yeah, I even just want to say that to you. I don't know if I've ever actually said that to you. It's like, I really honor that part of who you are and that you really like fight for that. And the other side of it too is like, I think Black and Asian solidarity is so important in these conversations around anti-racism and, you know, standing up to white supremacy and all of those conversations. And yet it's so complicated. And so every time I see a conversation happening around Black and Asian solidarity, I'm like, oh, it's just, it's such a tough conversation, but such an important one. And so, yeah, and so for that reason, too, I'm thankful for friends like you. And yeah, so I think this is me also just saying thank you. And thank you for seeing me in that week 1 year ago.
Oh, well, I think if you're going there, then the thank yous are going to get passed back and forth based on this conversation. Can I read just a piece of this?
Yeah.
They don't always kill you. Sometimes they say, well, actually, Sometimes they laugh and you're the punchline. Sometimes they say, she's not a good fit. She was asking for it. Go back to where you came from. They ask, well, where are you really from? What was she wearing? Where'd you learn to speak English so good? Can you, if you are able, sorry, let me just a touch of context. I am learning. This is what, and so part of why I welcome this voice, and not just in the points of trauma, but it is a very strange thing. I don't have a real solid grasp of Asian cultures or heritage, just in terms of like who I grew up around, that kind of thing. So the friends that I've made through music and art and creativity, I really welcome the perspective if they are Asian. So I watched this shooting in Atlanta spark a whole bunch of emotions that lay beneath the surface. But what happened is, from my context, is they were happening as ripples or residuals of the voices that Black people had raised over the last couple of years prior, like a couple of years, right? Like say 20, it's like Trayvon Martin in 2012 and subsequent cases, like the voices had been raised in significant ways. And then I Don't Know More in the country of Canada, raising Indigenous voices, like, okay, I was seeing communities rise up and say, we have actually been holding pain for a long time. And again, I am learning. So I'm learning the ways in which these anti-Asian hate crimes increased in the wake of the pandemic were causing significant damage. And so, you know, if I'm cheering anything, it's because I'm being enriched. I want to learn. And part of that means knowing means I need to sit in that pain and sit in that grief, especially with my friends and people I know. Could you, if you're able, just take us into a little bit about, you know, when you think about that poem now, you know, what memories do you connect it with? From that time.
Yeah. I think I connect it to just like all that is so hard to articulate in every other moment, because it feels like you feel it inside and you're like, oh, that was not right, right? Like the joke, the comment, the questions, like in that part that you just read. You just know, like, oh, that's not exactly landing the way that it should. But when you go to, like, kind of call it out or bring it up, it's like, oh, that I don't know what I'm saying either. Like, I don't know. It just feels like I'm not articulating that well either. So then for me, that was kind of this moment where it was like, all those times that has like caught in my throat has led to this moment of, you know, a mass shooting of Asian women in a lot of ways, right? Because those are all the things that are under the surface that kind of like, then you turn a blind, like, you know, I think later, I don't know if it was like later in that poem or something else I had written where it was just like, you know, first it's like Ching Chong, and then it's like you're being hate crimed, right? And it's like those things are not disconnected as much as, you know, people are like, oh, it's just a joke. So, yeah, so I think that was where, you know, that was coming from. And it is such a nuanced thing, because so many, not all, but so many people in the Asian community come from you know, immigrant families that were just taught, like, just don't worry about it. It's a good thing that we're here, so let's just keep our mouths shut kind of thing. And then quite frankly, on the other side of it, it is that sense, you know, the whole idea of the model minority myth and then a lot of that being rooted in anti-Blackness of being like, oh, well, we don't want to be like them. They're always like causing a stir. They're always complaining, you know, indigenous communities as well. Like that's the narrative. And then you're like, you know, for someone like me, you like then step back in that moment and you're like, hold on, what is going on here? Like, this is not the narrative that we should be writing. And so I'm not here for that. Like, we're going to link arms together. We're going to say, we're going to repent of, you know, the times that we've been complicit in systems of white supremacy as Asian Canadians, Asian Americans. And then we're going to get to work together.
You're reminding me of posts I've seen of yours around that, challenging that notion of the model minority. And I wonder, I think there were ways in which it was new for me when I heard you speak on it. I wondered if you could just break it down, if that's new to anybody that might be listening.
Yeah, absolutely. So the model minority myth is this idea that, primarily Asian members of the Asian diaspora, so like Asian Canadians, Asian Americans, inhabit this space as minorities where they've, you know, accomplished, quote unquote, a lot of success, the American dream, the Canadian dream. And so then it's kind of like, well, if they can do it as a minority, why can't, other communities of color follow suit?
Sure.
Therefore, you know, they must be lazy, complaining, you know, deficient in some way. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, Asian Americans, out of their desire to make a new life in a new country that's been then weaponized against other communities of color, you know, we've been put in there as this wedge. And it's been really, really harmful. And so realizing that we needed to call that out, realizing that that is, you know, part, like, upholding the model minority myth is part of upholding white supremacy. And so we need to get to the point where we point at that and say, that's not okay. It's not a narrative that I consent to being a part of. And so let's tear it down.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting to me how, you know, your words and your poetry tend to, start those conversations or are a spark for change and for people that are in your sphere. One of the things that stood out to me about They Don't Always Kill You is the similarities. Sorry, no, the way that I personally resonate with the experience. Mm-hmm. The well, actually. Is essentially the getting caught up in your throat, and when you dare be bold enough to speak on something that you don't think is right, you're questioned, undermined. The punchline is a significant, I think for at least for personally. Mm-hmm. And then there's where are you really from? Like the question I've spoken on that in poetry and song. And probably will continue to do so. It's one of those things that binds a lot of people. It's a point of connection, being asked, where are you from? You bring your perspective as a woman and corral all these voices into a piece that identifies the stressors, I think, that get compounded when stuff like this happens, like when crimes like this happen. It just seemed like a breaking point from a distance. Is that what it felt like?
Yeah, that is exactly it. I think it was, I had said in that week or maybe the week following as well, kind of the like, you know, it times up in a way, right? Like it's, and that's, you know, not necessarily true in the sense that like, you know, if you don't speak up and continue to like, just really, you know, be the model minority, like you probably will be rewarded because these are really deeply entrenched systems. So, you know, in a lot of ways, time wasn't up because I think there have been a lot of people who are just like, not worth it. I'd rather just continue in my own like little bubble. But yeah, for a lot of people, it was a breaking point. And it was that moment to be like, I haven't done my anti-racist work, but I'm certainly going to start now.
And I think I am blessed to see you again, like boldly process this in public. And I think it's going to be hard for me to unravel. Yeah, but I felt the kinship in that moment. I think, I guess, seeing some shared experience, but then also recognizing the exact thing that I call for others is necessary for me, just to sit, shut up, and learn. And so that's what I've been doing in engaging Asian thinkers and commenters and just trying to learn more. When I said earlier about what's impressive, like, you know, when something needs to be said, you say it. You wrote poems on George Floyd's murder. You wrote poems on, you wrote continuation. Like, you continued the thought 2 months later after his murder. And continued on again. The conversation, I guess you are not willing to let the conversation die. And there is one of those poems that you wrote about, or post George Floyd's murder, called Truth and Possibilities, where you said, the question is, are we ready to tell the truth? And, you know, we could sit here patting each other on the back. I just want to say thank you for continuing that conversation and then being willing to say, hey, listen, there's real solidarity that needs to happen between Black and Asian communities. And it makes more and more sense to me now as we start to tell the truth and share our stories and see where the connections are. So I encourage you to do something with this poem. Is that right?
Well, you know, honestly, before you had kind of called it out for, you know, what ended up being on the EP, I think I had said to you, I was like, I just write. Like, I write and I speak, but those things don't often, like, go together in the sense that, like, I don't perform what I write, basically ever. So that was a new thing for me, and it was fun. I'm thankful for you kind of calling that out.
We can go there. Is there anything more about this piece that you want to discuss?
I think I would just conclude with saying, like, you know, as you're talking about, like, oh, I'm doing what, like, I've called others to do, which is, like, you know, listen and learn. It's like, I've been so aware too, and have been aware since, you know, since that those moments of, like, that Stop Asian Hate really became prevalent, is that, you know, a lot of my Black friends and so many people in the Black community, it's like, they can point, they're standing in solidarity because they know exactly what it's like to, like, speak up and speak up and speak up, and then, mm-hmm. like, nobody listens, and then this huge thing happens that gets everyone's attention, and they're like, oh my gosh, like, we never knew. And it's like, well, we've been telling you. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, I'm just like, I'm very aware of that. And I'm, I think it's just like, I'm thankful for your posture, and also aware that in so many ways, like, your learning is just also innate and in your lived experiences as well. And so it's like a different kind of listening and learning that you do, I think. And I think that's important to call out, is that it's not just like the same kind of thing as, you know, maybe a white friend, because you have those other experiences that get layered on top of, you know, my experiences when I speak about them.
Oh my gosh. The experiences are spread out everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like reflecting on, you know, what kind of a person was I in elementary school? Did I ever participate in those jokes? What's my responsibility as a teacher? So I'm going to purposely not go into the story too much, but I remember that week a year ago, carving out some time in my class, because I think, yeah, so a year ago, we were supposed to have March break, but it got postponed.
And yeah.
I have a bunch of things to say about that, but I'm going to save those as well. And so what I decided to do was I was teaching sociology, and I said, we're going to have like a reading week, essentially, where I'm going to put a bunch of stuff up and you're going to read, engage, and journal. And then we're going to book speakers to come in virtually because we were all at home, and we're going to have some conversations, and then you're going to engage and journal. And so I remember having to push pause on one of the classes and say, like, this has happened, and I need, and doing my research to find suitable Asian commentary to be able to present in front of students and like say, I need you to listen to this. I don't know a lot here. I like this, like there's a bunch of stuff I'm learning, but I need you to listen. And it was interesting because the student stayed after class in the virtual space when everyone had gone. And he's like, thank you for saying this, for creating space. And I said, he said, you might think that's interesting that I would thank you for this because I am white, which is what the student said. He said, but I've been playing badminton my whole life. And so I've just been side by side with Asian teammates listening to their stories. Mm. And it was a fierce reminder about how connected we can be.
Yeah.
So yeah, so there's sort of all of that. And then the other thing is the model minority is like, you know, I do stand up about how like I'm more Carlton than Will Smith, but Carlton tried to fit in. Like Carlton was trying to be a model, you know, do good at school and all this stuff, and then, you know, nothing bad will happen to you. And he was rudely interrupted a few times, and so was I. And so, yeah, my own learning and growing has, yeah, it's personal. We're back on the John Corbin podcast. I'm here with Alyssa Esperaz. Alyssa, you mentioned prior about collaborating on my latest EP called Carry Me on a song called Broken Pieces, brackets, an Easter meditation. We are in March heading towards Easter. And yeah, I'm so... so thrilled that that you could work on this. I think I want to just quickly outline a bit of the journey. I put out a record in 2016 called A New Direction. It was a shift from my previous stage name, The Runaway, to my real name, John Corbin, and a narrative album chronicling that journey to some degree. And then I signed with Lost and Found Music and started working with more songwriters, sort of changing the way I wrote. And an album came together pretty quickly called Every Day that I was able to release in 2018. I don't know if the pandemic would have delayed this record that I'm working on right now. But I have been doing a bunch of things, and some of those have been in response to the pandemic. So I have a record in progress called A New Perspective. And it sort of is a combination of the prior two. A narrative about self-worth and understanding, and also sort of the reflecting on the spiritual lessons I learn from everyday living. And I've been working and working and working away at a song called Broken Pieces. And before we shut down, I had something pretty solid that I liked a lot and thought I was done. I had the guest verse and I had the someone singing the hook, and I couldn't write my own thing. And that's another thing. I had significant writer's block. So I was trying to do everything else, put the pieces around me. So whenever the words came, then I would be able to execute. And so I think it is into that that I asked you to speak. I don't remember. Was this a piece that you had already written, or did you write for this song?
I think I wrote for this song. Yeah, I wrote it for this song, maybe out of, you know, something that you had potentially already seen that I had like posted or shared, and mm-hmm. and then it eventually like those ideas evolved into this. But I do remember writing specifically for the song and like on this idea of broken pieces. Yeah, and I remember us like getting on a call and you kind of talking about like, here are some of the things that I've been thinking about for this, and I was like scribbling it down in my notebook, and then eventually it all came what it is now.
Right. And you said this is a rare time that you would write and perform.
Yes. Yeah. Like right. The only time, I would say.
Well, there you go. It is so interesting. And maybe it's me because I can write and do that. And then I, you know, every day go and speak in front of students. So there's a performance aspect to that. I have always visualized the marriage of those two things because you speak, because I knew you as a speaker.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
And so I just have this vision of the collected works of Alyssa Esperaz being read. Yeah, like a book and a book reading, and there you are. And this is what I've always been able to see. So I don't know if it'll ever happen because it's not my life, it's yours. But I definitely think that if you ever decide to collect these things, that would be a valuable thing to attend. I do. And so it starts with Broken Pieces. So all of that was moving to like towards a finished song as soon as I got my act together, you know, maybe being a bit too hard on myself, but. And then my engineer lost all the files and there was no backup. And so nothing was left except for what you had sent me. And yeah, there had a bunch of work had gone into it. And so I wanted to pivot. I appreciate poetry, and I appreciate spoken word, and so I'm always sort of creating and then taking the puzzle pieces I have and seeing if they will connect. So I whenever I start to create with intention, it fails. It's not that I have a blank slate, but I just respond to whatever is happening in the moment, I can create something very interesting, and then at some point I go, oh, this verse can go here, and this thing can go here. And so I just have to trust. It's a act of trust when I'm making something that it will get used somewhere at some time. And suddenly it became very clear that your piece would fit perfectly with this down-tempo, meditative track that I had created, and that was not the original song. The original song did not really have that vibe. I had to sort of strip it away, strip down the beat to have something without drums. There was a rhythm, but no drums, so that your rhythm of speech was not competing with the rhythm of the drums. But in this case, I did what I love doing, which is taking that raw material and creating around it. And it is a rare song that's recorded of mine because it doesn't have me on it. It's just you. I got to arrange, like produce and arrange the song, and then create use samples and create music around it that would sort of speak to the mournfulness that I was feeling. But I had to let the music speak, and then there you are, with exactly what I was expecting. The broken pieces of our lives, they only seem to reflect the broken pieces of our world. That was your opening line. That is your opening line. And it just exactly what I was expecting, because you see globally. And you hold it sometimes, which can be very painful. What do you remember about writing that piece, or any of the sentiments within it?
Yeah, I remember. Firstly, I want to say, like, I forget that people can't see me, but like, I was like losing my mind when you were telling the story about how like you lost all the files and stuff, like, because I got to hear some of it while I was writing this piece, and it was like really good stuff. And is it okay if I talk about what I heard way before?
Yeah, no, go for it. Yeah.
Okay. I think like what I'm remembering is like this piece was really about like, you know, people grappling with the broken pieces of their lives, right? Like family falling apart, like, you know, that those kinds of things. And I think for me, like what I remember now is like really grappling with the fact that like, even though there's a global pandemic going on and it seems like the world is shut down, because this was pretty early pandemic, like when I wrote this, it was like, you know, even though we're in shutdown, like these hard things that happen to people, those things aren't shut down. Like those things are still happening in our personal lives, like at a personal level, right? Like marriages are still falling apart in this season. Like I assume, like, you know, people are still dying, and more people are dying than ever before. Yeah. Like that's happening at a very personal level. And then, you know, conversations about like race and racism, it's like, yeah, racism is still going on, like let's be very clear. And then on top of all that, here's a global pandemic. And yeah, I don't know, there was just something to me about thinking about that and thinking about like, how are we supposed to do a global pandemic when we also are doing like the individual things that are happening to us?
Yeah, I think there's a line in there where you say, who are we in this moment?
Yeah.
And it's beautiful self-reflection. I mentioned that I think you have the ability to see globally. I think that, you know, some of your work with compassion does that. I think some of your traveling does that. I also think it's part of who you are. What are you seeing these days? Because I can't remember if it's a year or 2 years since you've written that piece. And obviously, you know, it took time for me to put things together, but what are you seeing these days that might be connected to what you said and what you previously wrote, or, you know, what you're thinking right now?
Yeah, it's funny because I hadn't, like, you know, listened to it or read those words for a long time. And then when the EP came out, obviously I listened to it and I was like, I could have written this yesterday, like, given what's going on in the world today. You know, turns out war is erupting and that level of things is happening. And yeah, and then also in my everyday work, I tell stories of children living in poverty. And that's kind of been this like constant undertone for me as well, is that like global poverty is on the rise because of everything else that's going on in the world. And so it is that really sobering reality, right? And that, like, who are we in this moment? What do we then call out of ourselves in the moment that we're in? And so that too is like still going on. Again, it's like one of those other things where it's like, what are those hidden stories, the things we're never going to realize or see? The, you know, parent living in the global South, like, it's like, you know, do I self-isolate, or do I like get food on the table? Those are the decisions that, you know, we don't always think about first.
Yeah. 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 I think, I listened to the EP and then, it's the only thing you didn't mention was war from a couple of years ago. But you also talk about resisting.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
Yeah. I think the line was resist and persist to what end?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I remember really thinking about that because, you know, a lot of people have been talking about like, oh, this is building resilience. And like, you know, as like, you know, I graduated from university like right at the beginning of the pandemic. And it's like, oh, like, you know, being young during this pandemic, like you're going to like, it's going to build resilience in you. And I'm like, for what? Like, are we going to do this again? And I'm going to need my resilience for that. But, you know, that's where like eventually, speaking of an Easter meditation, it's like you look towards, like, as I got towards the end of the poem, you know, for me, as someone who follows Jesus, as someone who believes in this Easter story that we read in the Bible, there is an end. To what end? There's an answer to that question, mm-hmm. right? And it's not like well packaged, tied up with a bow thing that, you know, sometimes they want you to believe when you show up to church in your like Easter dress and your like perfectly made up family for Easter service.
Sure.
It's actually a story about broken pieces. It's the story of a broken body that did rise whole as one body, as I say at the end of that poem, but it's scarred. And that's real. And that's kind of like, that's the thing that we need to be meditating on at Easter more than ever, I really believe.
Yeah. You mentioned the broken body of Jesus. You also mentioned, you also mentioned him as a brown-skinned savior, which I feel was very intentional.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those things that's like, it's almost put in there as just like, it's just there because it's true. Mm-hmm. But because it's just there, because it's true, it is intentional.
Yeah. And even a small way to resist the narratives, especially, you know, and we might need to get into this here, but yeah, like this idea of brokenness. It's not like the scriptures haven't illuminated this, right? That there would be wars and rumors of wars. And I think the playing out of our free will, which allows us to pursue wealth in ways that will denigrate people, that allows us to pursue people in ways that would dehumanize others. Like, there's lots of the choices that we get to make that have consequences. and that they bear out in ways that cause a lot of pain. And my reflections recently have been, you know, the hymn that I remember singing, Man of Sorrows. And I think, what were the sorrows that Jesus experienced on this earth that would connect his experience to mine? Because it is not just the sorrows of a crucifixion. It's not like everything was great and then he was crucified. No, there was political unrest. There was constant threats on his life. There was residential instability, not being with a partner. There were a bunch of things that that I could see, and I've just been trying to meditate on more. I'm asking myself, does it give me comfort to understand that Jesus shares in my pain? That's what I've been thinking about lately. Mm. You and I are part of a church that is being called out for patriarchal behavior, abuse, white supremacy, clergy abuse. where are you right now in sort of seeing all this as a person of color with a faith, trying to follow a faith in this institution that is showing its colors?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it? And I think there's a few places that I take this. You know, there's the one my mind immediately goes to right now is like, you know, when you talk about like, when you're saying that sentence, we're part of a church,
yeah.
Talking about like big C church, right? Like we're part of the church. And for me, I then think about like, oh, that's really good, because that means that, you know, that this church, this body is wider and more expansive than either of us has experienced yet. And even, you know, in my own, like in the work that I do, like I get to, you know, I get a unique vantage point into like the global church as well. And, you know, that's not to say, you know, I take a lot of issue, I think, with people who would like romanticize like people in mm-hmm. poverty who are in church, like they just like love Jesus more and it's perfect. And it's like,
sure,
let's yeah. not romanticize. Like there's some problematic westernization in that as well. But what I do mean is that, you know, the like kind of white Western hegemonic experiences of church that maybe like we are often used to living in Canada, that's not the church, the body that's a part of the church and still a beloved part of the church that, you know, for better, for worse, like I will always be a part of because I'm a part of the body of Christ. And I really go back to the end of that poem, which is like, Christ's body has been fractured before. It's been ripped apart before. And in so many ways, I like rested in that truth over the past couple years as I've like literally seen that, right? Like the body of Christ being ripped apart. And somehow believing the truth of the resurrection story, that when Christ's body was broken during the crucifixion, the end of that story was that there was resurrection in a whole body.
Yeah. So I'm hearing you say again, because you can see globally, and then watching what's happening in our country and our continent, that's been necessary for you to have some kind of hope.
Yeah. And I think too, like, it's, you know, don't get me wrong too. It's like, there are the days where you wake up and you're like, will I always be a part of this body? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
There are the days you wake up and you're like, what is going on here? What am I doing? Like, and that's the real journey of faith. I think that's what maybe even like, because, you know, earlier you were talking about like the creative process being one of trust. And maybe that's just like, I see parallels there, right? Like, There are days you wake up and you're like, will I ever create something like worthy again? Not worthy, worthy is the wrong word. Will I ever create something that I feel like is like, oh yeah, I'm like, I want to share this with people, whatever it is. And yeah, so for me, it's like, it's that global perspective. And then it's also that really like rooted perspective too. Back to that word rooted, where it's like, I have my people who show me Jesus. I have the people that, like the words justice and joy next to each other have been really important to me recently.
Hmm.
Where it's like, I have seen, I have experienced, I do see, I do experience the body of Christ here and now that cultivates justice and joy.
That's so important. I haven't heard anybody, sorry, I just wanted, like, that's so important that you have those people that are bringing that up, helping strengthen your faith. Intentionally or unintentionally, right? Like those people that are a good presence in your life, a spiritual presence, a godly presence, a Jesus presence. I haven't heard people put justice and joy together like that. Where did that come from?
For me, it came from needing to be intentional about fighting cynicism. I am very much a person I'm very tempted to be cynical very often. I am cynical a lot of the time, potentially because of the work I do, because of the things I speak up about, the responses that sometimes I get to those things. And so, yeah, for me, it's like, okay, what is this about, right? Like it's, I love this. It's like figuring out not what you're against, where like that's important to articulate, but then also figuring out what you're for. And for me, it was like,
yeah,
cultivating justice, cultivating joy. You know, as someone who does, you know, want to fight for justice, also realizing that joy is resistance often in a world that doesn't want us to be joyful. So, yeah, those are some of the things I've been reflecting on in that space.
That's big. That's big. It sounds like grounds for us to collaborate in the future.
I love it.
I have been holding on to some music that is done, that is not, it's just not the right time. But what I realized in the interim is that I'd like to build out around it some pieces, and I have collected a couple already on joy as connected to as it's connected to justice in terms of it's the thing, I haven't made this connection until now, it's the thing that actually keeps me going in a lot of these spaces, right? Because it's not just the church that is Eurocentric and that I've been a part of all my life, by the way. Like, I don't make the assumption that, you know, that your hope means that you are like, you know, flying high in the sky every day. Like we feel the grief of what has been happening, and you know you've processed some of that with us online. But it's not just, you know, it's not the church for me. It's actually the encounter that happened to me when I was 16, and so my faith's locked in, and I just believe as a part of that, that gathering is necessary. And so that's why I continue to go to church. A bunch of times I haven't enjoyed it because of its Eurocentrism. Mm. Then it's also teaching. In some sense, it's also my neighborhood, because since I was a teenager, that's kind of lived in like monocultural neighborhoods, where I sort of yearn for a multiculturalism. Yeah, it's a bunch of those things that what I'm recognizing more and more is the need to exist as proudly as I can, as boldly as I can, but and as holistically as I can. So sometimes, for me, if you see me writing about justice or speaking about justice, penning poems or posts or speaking or whatever, and then I don't do it for a while, that's me inhaling. And just like, okay, let's breathe again. This took a lot of effort, this exhale. And maybe while I was exhaling, someone punched me in the ribs. And I need to breathe again and exist. And through all of it, build up the capacity to be able to share again. But it's got to come from a joy of living. It has to. All right, so you and I are going to collaborate again. I've decided.
I'm looking forward to it.
Sweet. It's locked in, folks. Where can people find your writing or your expression?
Yeah. I mean, I guess the easiest central place would be my website. So I have a really... It's just hard to... line up the vowels in my name, so I can spell it out, or I guess you can put it in some notes.
Do both. I'll do that, and I'll put in the notes, and you spell
okay.
it.
Okay, it's A L Y S S A E S P A R A Z .ca. So AlyssaEsperez.ca. It's just my name, but arranging the vowels. There's a lot of them.
There are a lot of vowels, blessed vowels. A buddy of mine, he has a jingle for his social media handle. So we're gonna have to work on that.
Yeah,
we're gonna have to something you can sing that will connect. I would highly recommend this writing. I mean, we didn't even talk about. There was one that you got me with. Was it Shang-Chi? No. Mulan, watching the live action Mulan, and how complicated it was for you as an Asian Canadian. I was really blessed by that one too. There's lots of good writing here, so I'm definitely gonna funnel people this way. And if you have an opportunity, check out Broken Pieces, an Easter Meditation, and the fine work of Alyssa Esperez. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, John. It's been a pleasure.
Broken pieces of our world. And all this brokenness, I know it weighs heavy. Climate change, police brutality, extreme poverty, a global pandemic. Who are we in this moment that seems to be exposing our collective brokenness? Exposing our in-betweenness, in between broken and whole. Here in heaven. The kingdom is near, but it's also not yet. How do we live in the tension of this in-between? How do we live with great expectation, with living hope, when disappointment seems to be waiting at every turn? Creation groans because healing takes time. Resist, resist, to what end? We have all of these pieces to pick up and put together, and maybe our only hope is our brown-skinned savior, whose body broke open on a cross once for us. He broke, he died, but then he rose. And when he rose as one whole body, his body, the body, our body, broken and then made whole.
Thank you so much for listening to the John Corbin Podcast. If you enjoyed this conversation, why not become a part of it? Hit me up on social media. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are all at John Corbin Music. That's J-O-N-C-O-R-B-I-N. That's right, it's John with no H. You can stay on top of my music and creative work at johncorbinmusic.com. Finally, if you're enjoying this podcast, please like, share, favorite, and subscribe. Spreading the word is one of the best things you can do to help this podcast grow. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you again soon.